Welcome to episode 15 of the Going Deeper podcast. My name is Robbie. I'm your host for this episode. And joining me to my right is JD.
Hello.
And Jeff.
Good morning, everybody.
And Wayne's on my left.
Hello.
Hey, good morning, guys. How you doing?
Doing well.
Real good.
Great.
Hey, so we realize that you as a listener, it may not be morning where you are. And maybe you've brought us along on your run on the treadmill. I'm sorry for that. You're going to die anyways, so just run faster. And maybe you're on a commute, and we'd hope that this episode would help you go deeper in your faith on whatever that may look like. Again, if you want to add to this conversation, we'd love to hear from you. You can email us at info@goodnewsgathering.org. Or if you're with us on a Sunday morning, you can write on a communication card any questions you might have and can kick to us. So, in this room, we have some Brown fans, which usually
off-season champions, yeah, baby.
So next week's the draft. How are you feeling about that?
Well, I'm excited.
That says it all.
I'm excited.
It was like, silence.
I think having the 1 and the 4 is pretty sweet, and not to mention 3 second round picks too. So you have five shots in the first 65 to
screw it up.
To screw it up, to get really, really good players. So I'm excited about that.
The problem I have is we've been in this position since we came back into existence, and it hadn't seemed to make a difference. So
yeah, it doesn't matter where
my hopes
are
not that high.
You at least have a seat at the table. This is the kid like at Thanksgiving where you're like, okay, you're too old to like sit at the kids' table, but we'll let you come and play with the big kid, with the adults.
Yeah, that's right.
And then he's still doing weird things at the table. Yeah, so we'll see what happens.
I'm a fan right now. I'm a fan of the kid from Wyoming, Josh Allen. I'm hoping they take him. Big rocket arm and seems like a really strong character, like good, decent kid. And Sam Darnold's turnovers turned me off. So like, I like
Josh
Allen.
So they need a new quarterback.
You need a new quarterback.
New offense.
Every year.
Every year. Yeah. So at the 4, though.
Nice NFL farm team.
Yeah. At the 4, though, I think we take either Saquon Barkley, who's legitimately awesome, or that defensive end from North Carolina State. So Bradley Chubb, I think, is his name. So those are my hopes for the first round.
Well, I'm sure we will wait with bated breath to see.
I will be tracking it that night. I can tell you that much. I will be tracking.
And then the Reds fired their manager today.
Oh, really?
So, really?
Yeah, they fired Price, and
that's really going to help the pitching staff too.
It's probably going to turn.
This
turn
will
the
turn your batting
around.
Averages up 50 points,
Yeah. So it increases morale. Beatings will continue until morale improves. Yeah. So this is, I had a professor in college said he liked watching baseball because he liked watching millionaires make mistakes. So, we'll see what happens. But anytime a team does bad, including the Browns with that, it's Ohio. If you're a professional team, Ohio sports, but two, they're building. We're rebuilding. Like, how long does that process go for?
A lifetime.
It's a lifetime of rebuilding until we win.
I think I said it in a previous podcast, but it still holds true. It's a darn good thing to be an Ohio State fan if you're a Browns fan.
Yeah.
Because you can guarantee one win a weekend.
It tempers the self-loathing.
Yes, it does. Yeah. It's really like last season was really bad, though, because we lost 2 regular season games for Ohio State, that is. And so you knew that weekend was going to be dark, because when Ohio State loses, you're losing tomorrow. So it's like, daggone it.
I got nothing.
Yeah, I got nothing. The one nice thing is one of the losses fell on Roots weekend. So at least I had that. That was a good weekend, regardless of Ohio State biting it.
Don't take it so personally, man. I don't think they did it because of you.
I can't help it, man. It's the fate of an Ohio State fan. It's always we and us. It's never them.
Well, hey, we are in the middle of a series called Four Text Messages God Didn't Send. Let me say that again. Four text messages God didn't send. And this week, JD, you addressed that this fallacy that we tend to believe and base some of our theology, a view of God. I mean, that's really what theology mm-hmm. is, a view of God. And we base it off of this, that God won't give me more than I can handle. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we have received that. I know I have. Mm-hmm. We've said it to comfort people, and really it's not very comforting if you think about it.
No.
And so I guess, was there anything, you know, this weekend that you're saying, hey, we could have spent a little more time on that or said that more clearly or anything like that?
Well, I think probably the one point that I felt like I didn't spend as much time as I did the others on was that idea that sometimes that more than we can handle experience in life is the result of our own failures, that our behaviors, our choices, our decisions can often put us in a situation where we end up feeling like, oh my goodness, I have more, I can't handle this. My life is, you know, too crazy. It's out of control. Things are going bad. I remember hearing a story about a guy, and he was in college, and in 1 week, you know, like the span of a week, week and a half, grades tanked, and got in trouble with the law, and, you know, fraternity almost got shut down because of a big, like, hazing incident. And it just, like, in the matter of, like, just a few days, this person that went from, you know, kind of being a reasonably respected kid on campus has now been involved in, like, three kind of major fallouts, and really lost the reputation.
Is this a friend with not, air quotes?
No, not it? A okay. friend, not me. But a situation where this guy went from kind of 60 to zero real quick. And in his own discussion about that, kind of got to that place of total overwhelm. Like, I can't handle this. This is crazy. My life is spinning out of control. And it was in that moment that he reached out to God, because there was nothing left in his mind. He's like, there's nothing left. And he realized, you know, there are times when God will allow me to have more than I can handle because he allows me to make my own decisions. And sometimes I screw those decisions up.
Yeah. I think sometimes it's just a result of our own doing mm-hmm. in that. And I think the danger comes, and you guys can weigh in on this, but the danger comes when I believe that God won't allow, like there's some sort of floodgate of giving me more than I can handle, then I will look to anything else but myself for causing this. Mm-hmm. And I'll actually say, I could almost fall into the trap of thinking, well, God gave this to me mm-hmm. in this. And I think God will use those situations. But back to a previous podcast that we had, I don't think God's causing those situations oftentimes. Mm-hmm.
Certainly. I mean, you look at the fact that we were created as free moral beings. Right, given this opportunity by God to make decisions and to some degree or another decide how we want to live our lives, whether or not we're going to follow him, whether or not we want to listen to him, obey him, disobey him, those kinds of things. And so ultimately, you and I get that choice, and with that come the natural consequences of our behaviors. And to some degree or another, we have to account for the fact that God in his love for us has given us that opportunity. And yet we are responsible for the fallout of many of the situations in which we put ourselves.
And I can have often debated with friends over this sometimes and trying to point them, as the lesson was on Sunday, to the scripture to the right point. And some people times get that ingrained and they start, you know, believing that. But what I try to tell them, I said, even if we disagree on this, which I said Charles Swindell quoted one time, life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to that. And I think the big thing you got to take out of it is, okay, here I'm in this situation. What got me here? Now what do I do with it? You know, mm-hmm. And that's the big thing in maturing as a Christian is, how do I allow God to work through this situation? to get me where, and why am I here, and what am I going to do about that? And so many times people react the wrong way, and boom, they're in a position like, why am I here? Well, how did you react to that? So,
well, and I think in our culture today, the knee-jerk reaction anytime we're in trouble is to blame somebody else.
Yes.
Or to blame circumstances around us, or to claim to be some kind of victim, rather than to look within and say, okay, what's my role in this situation? How did I get here? Like the friend that you talked about in college, what were his actions that brought him to that point? Mm-hmm. And until you're able to actually look in the mirror, you're dead in the water. Nothing's going to change. Your situation is not going to improve until you look within and say, okay, what is it in me that aided in getting me here? Mm-hmm. You have to have that kind of honesty, or you're never going to be able to, the situation's never going to improve.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that part of it is really important to think about, because there are situations that do happen to us. I mean, you think about, a disease popping up in a loved one, or a death of someone that you care about. These are situations that happen to you, and they may cause you to, they may, you know, kind of lead you into a situation where you are kind of overwhelmed, taken for a ride a little bit, and thrown into a situation where you believe you are dealing with more than you can handle. But there are those other situations where it's really, truly your fault. and in those situations, we have to be willing to look in the mirror, and we have to be willing to see, like Moses in the lesson. That was one of the things I tried to point out, as I was talking through that story about Moses. Moses had this serial problem of taking too much on and delegating too little. This is something that happened to him on multiple occasions. I mean, this is not the first time that he came to this point of having to be redirected either by God or by, in another situation, it was his father-in-law, right? Coming to him and saying, what you're doing isn't smart. Like, you keep assuming you have to do it all. And, his father-in-law, kind of says, divvy out some of this judging responsibility. And then later, you got God coming to him going, give me 70 people and I'll help you farm this out. Like, because Moses had a tendency to take it all on himself and to assume that he was the one that had to have the power to accomplish what was necessary. And so in that, yeah, you see, I mean, the complaining that Moses was dealing with, not his fault. Right? The fact that the people were whining about the food, not his fault. The fact that they were turning on him, not his fault, right? But the assumption, inherent in his statement, where am I going to get meat for all these people, is what, I mean, I've got to do this. And he wasn't even really looking at God at that point. He was complaining to God, but he wasn't looking to God for the response necessary. And immediately after this, you see God send this flood of quail right into that. And had he simply just prayed, God, I can't get meat for these people. I know I can't get meat for these people. If you want them to have meat, send it. If you don't, believe me, I'm not going to complain about this manna. I feel like he would have probably been less overwhelmed. But because he took that on himself, because he assumed he had to be the one to go get it, then he hit that wall that we sometimes hit. And it was because of his own decisions about whether or not he was going to trust God or rely upon himself.
One of the things that I've thought about this lesson series is I felt that this particular lesson was probably probably the most difficult in this way. When you think about that scripture, 1 Corinthians 10:13, the text message God didn't send is so close to the truth. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. And when you read that passage, if you're not careful in your reading of scripture, you can get that. You can get there with, okay, God won't give me more than I can handle. There's, I mean, it's it's easy for me to understand why so many people say that and so many people think that, because it is so close. But it's just that difference. And when you take it away from the issue of temptation, which is what that scripture is aimed at, when you get it beyond that, it's close, but it's not the truth. Mm-hmm. And there's where you exchange the truth of God for a lie. And whenever you do that, one of the points that you made, JD, is whenever you do that, you always run into that problem that your faith is on a foundation that is not firm. Mm-hmm. And I think it really, that one thing that came through in that lesson, I hope loud and clear for our people, is be very careful how you read scripture. Because when you take it a direction it's not intended to go, you can get in a lot of trouble very quickly.
Yeah. So let me just read 1 Corinthians 10:13. It says, "No temptation has overtaken you except what is common to mankind. And God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. But when you are tempted, he will also provide a way out so that you can endure it." And so it's interesting, if you, like you said, if we remove that idea of temptation, well, then we're not reading it right in that. Mm-hmm. So think about, if I have all of these problems in my life, well, that's one thing that God is all about, giving me more than I can handle so I can learn how to trust him. Mm-hmm. But now the temptation to maybe sin out of that, well, now I have a way out of that. Mm-hmm. So they can almost overlay on top of each other in our life. So how are we reacting to what we've been given, I think, is really kind of the question that, for me, mm-hmm. that comes to the surface.
Yeah, that kind of gets back to the point Wayne made earlier.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. And how many times in our life, you've heard someone say, well, I'm not going to believe that. That can't be true. Even though they know it is, you don't want to accept that at that moment in your life. You know, whether it be a phone call or whatever the news may be, I just can't internalize that right now because I just can't handle it. And that's, we have some of these truths that we want to feel the warm, fuzzy thing, but sometimes it comes down to it. Yeah, this is what really has happened. This is what's going on. And how do I move past that now?
Yeah. And I think it's great that our, you know, focus verse being in Romans 1, this is the idea that where again, a couple times it says in verse 24 that God, therefore God gave them over to sinful desires of their hearts, that this idea that God just kind of gets out of the way, and sin has natural consequences. It just does. And so if he just kind of gets out of it, we can go, God, why'd you do this? But he's going, you're the one that was following this sinful activity, mm-hmm. and the natural consequence just happened, and I'm giving you over to that. And so I think to understand that there are times, sure, he can step in, but there's other times he's going to step out. And I think that's, JD, where you talked about that God's disciplining us, and we can, mm-hmm. I think sometimes we have a bad view of discipline and what that means, but mm-hmm. that it's actually out of love.
It is
that I'm gonna let this go so that you can learn how to trust me more.
Absolutely. I mean, when you think about that passage in particular, you know, that idea that God is giving them over to the sinful desires of their heart, allowing them to experience the natural consequences of their behavior, and then you pair that up with that Hebrews 12 chapter about God's discipline, and he disciplines those he loves. He allows them to feel the pain of what they have done to themselves, so that maybe they will recognize, I don't want to do that anymore. I mean, you know, it's kind of like you think about it in terms of a parent, because that's the image that God uses in Hebrews chapter 12, right? This parent that disciplines the child that he loves. Sometimes you got to cause a little pain to help that child recognize that's not going to help you. That's a bad thing for you. And whether you believe in, you know, spanking your children or not spanking your children, there are times when you have to let them feel the consequences of their behavior. You know, so when your kid, you know, gets mad and starts throwing stuff, and the ball that they just hurled against the wall bounces back and hits them in the face and they're crying, you know, to some degree or another, you got to look at them and say, yes, that's what you did, right? You did that. That's your fault. And you know, son, I love you, honey, I love you, but you got to get control on your anger. You got to get control on this frustration that you're experiencing. Like, you can't react that way to stuff. And I think when we look at God disciplining our negative behaviors, rather than we look at it, God just shoveling more into our life, like, oh, I think you can handle more. Here's some more. Like, just throw a little bit more on top of it. You know, that doesn't really get at his nature. What gets at his nature is he cares about you enough to not want you to have to continually re-experience the negative consequences of your pattern of behavior. So he's going to let you feel the sting a little bit right now in the hopes that it prevents you from feeling further, bigger stings later.
Yeah, I don't think God's just almost mocking you, like, ha ha, pile more till you trust me. You know, we can get this image of that. And I think that idea of God as a father, a perfect father. And I think about how my parents disciplined me, but they did it differently. And now as a parent myself, I do it differently for each kid, and I do it differently as they get older. Mm-hmm. That God is not being vengeful in discipline. He's being good and kind because he knows exactly what you need in that moment.
One of my favorite movies ever, like hands down favorite movies ever, is Bruce Almighty, right? I think it's so clever and so funny, and I'm a Jim Carrey guy myself. I think he's hilarious, but one of the scenes in that movie, so he gets fired and he's got some problems with his girlfriend, and there's like all this stuff going wrong in his life, and every little tiny thing that happens just makes him more and more frustrated till he ends up on the side of the road screaming at God, like, you're the one who's not doing what you're supposed to do, and he's so angry, and he's viewing all of these things that have happened, you know, naturally, and some of them are the result of his own negativity and jealousy and frustration and anger management issues and all that kind of stuff, and he's viewing this as if it's God's fault, and so he's standing on the side of the road shaking his fist at God, and yet what's so evident in that moment is that it's been his choices all along that have resulted in the situation that he's in, you know, and he's got that whole, and a side of guilt, please. Right. He's like, he's just looking, all right, throw a little bit more on me, God. I clearly you think I can handle it. And that's just the totally wrong perspective for a person who truly reads the Bible for what it actually says. You know, yes, there will be situations where God allows us to be disciplined. Yes, there will be situations that are beyond our control because we live in a fallen world that throw us off our course a little bit and that make us feel overwhelmed. But God promises to be in those situations with us, guiding us and leading us and giving us his help to learn the things we need to learn, to grow in the ways we need to grow, and to be a benefit to others who are maybe going to go through that at some point down the road. Dad's over the course of the years and in many different situations, I've heard Dad use that phrase, you know, your greatest hurts become your greatest ministry. Sometimes that those places of overwhelm become places, you know, from which you learn a ton so that you can guide other people who end up in a similar spot. And so I think to some degree or another, we have to accept that sometimes God will allow certain things into our lives for various reasons, whether it's because of our behavior or just because of natural events happening around us, that we can be a benefit to other people through those.
Yeah, the late author Dallas Willard said that the Christian life is what you do when you realize that you can do nothing, and that God is found at the end of our ropes. Mm-hmm. And I love that, this idea that God is living at the end of my rope, and I think sometimes, even me personally, I can fall into the trap of thinking Jesus is this supplement, and so God, it's that. Bruce Almighty stuff. God, I held up to my end of the bargain. Mm-hmm. I showed up to church, joined a life group. I'm praying every day. I'm reading my Bible every day. And this still happened. How could you do this to me? Mm-hmm. And in that, we have to realize, like, we're not worshiping the God of the Bible anymore at that point. Mm-hmm. To think that he is obligated to act on our behalf because I did fill in the blank. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that that if I get to the end of my rope, that's where I'm going to find him and find hope.
Yeah. I like your quote from last week. I think it was, you know, Jesus plus everything equals nothing, but Jesus plus nothing can be everything. And that's where we got to get to the point where, hey, he is in control. He's going to get me through this. I love that. I thought about that all week. That is, you know, all I need. And then the point Jeff made a few weeks ago, and is God enough in our lives? If we get to the point, God is enough to get me through this. Mm-hmm. And then we mature to that point. Yeah, he got me. He can get me through this.
That's one of the things I love about that story we used on Sunday, is because, you know, God shows up in Moses' situation. Yes. And he proves to be enough. You know, he helps Moses. And I really tried to hammer on that point, that God didn't bash him for getting overwhelmed. God didn't, you know, God didn't come and call him out for his lack of faith, or even his desire to be killed rather than continue to do this. You know, like, God literally didn't come and correct him, you know, for his lack of belief. He showed him how powerful that he was. And God shows up, and he does what was necessary, and he does what Moses couldn't and wouldn't do for himself. And in that, I think there was even a greater redirection than you know, God just coming down and going, Moses, now you shouldn't get freaked out like that, and you shouldn't get scared like that, and for heaven's sakes, delegate something to somebody every now and again. You know, rather than doing that, God just shows up, and he shows him how to fix the problem. And he shows in his own power how he can raise up people around us. And that has sometimes been my issue in life, you know, and my issue in ministry is sometimes, you know, there are times when, you know, everything kind of goes wrong, right? And stuff breaks down and people leave and other things happen. And all of a sudden you're stuck going, what am I going to do? What in the world am I going to do? And it's in those moments I've learned to kind of look for it. And I'm still bad at that. And I can still go down the Moses road sometimes. Don't get me wrong. Right? But I've learned to begin trying to look for, I wonder how God's going to work this out. You know, rather than, what am I going to do? Like, I wonder how God's going to work this out. And it's funny, you know, that you see all of a sudden people that you didn't have appear, or situations that appeared to have no resolution ultimately get resolved without a ton of effort on your part. And you start to see God work, and it becomes this really powerful experience, and it becomes a place where you kind of have to hit your knees and go, I see what you just did there. And that was incredible. Maybe next time I won't worry so much. Maybe next time I'll remember this. You know, and you start to see him do what only he can do. And in that moment, you learn to trust that he will do that if you get out of the way and let him work.
Well, you think about that moment in Jesus' life where he got to the end of his rope. I mean, in the garden. And here it is. It's on at that moment, and he's overwhelmed, and the Bible even indicates he was overwhelmed to the point of death, and this is before he was ever beaten or hung on a cross, and yet in that moment he still had the wherewithal to say, "Your will be done." And I think when we get to those moments in our life, when we think like Moses, just let me go home to heaven. You know, I'd like a little peace in my life. It's in those moments, if we can remember that, God, your will be done, whatever it is. If I need to self-examine, if I need to look and see how I got here and how I contributed to this, or if it's just one of those things that happened to me and it was beyond my control, even in whatever it is, in that moment, your will be done. Let's move. Let's go, and I think when we get to that point, God invariably shows up. He did it for Moses. He did it for his son. He'll do it for you.
Yeah, I was looking it up in 1 Kings 19. Elijah pretty much asks for the same thing that Moses did. Just kill me now.
I actually looked at that passage as another one that I could have used. Yeah,
so it just gets too much. But I love what God tells him to do. He tells him to go take a nap and eat a cake. and I have true to biblical teachings. That has been my answer for a lot of problems.
Let them eat cake.
Eat the cake and go take a nap. Yeah. And just so.
But you know, I think right there though, you raise a really good point, Robbie. God cares about the physical needs. You know, God. I mean, what's fascinating about that passage, and part of the reason I picked the Moses one is I felt like I could get in and out of it a little faster. But there is some real cool stuff happening in that First Kings, you know, chapter, because God, you know, you got Elijah, and he's overwhelmed, and he's scared, and he's thinking he's the only one left, right? I'm the only one left that doesn't worship Baal, right? And God's like, yeah, you're not. But like he deals with him on these like physiological and psychological, like, I mean, his responses to Elijah hit him at almost every level of his being. You know, takes care of him physically, eat the cake, take a nap. He, you know, he reminds him that he's not alone, dealing kind of with that psychological concern. You know, he approaches him in every facet. And I think that's really fascinating, and it shows how God cares for all of us, and not just all of us in the plural sense, all of you and all of me. Like that, there's no part of him that, or no part of us, you know, physical, spiritual, mental, emotional, whatever, that he doesn't care about. And so there are times and situations in which you're right. A nap is what you need. I mean, you need some sleep. You need to rest. You need to, you know, recuperate. There are times when you need to go all out and you need to give whatever last ounce of effort you have, i.e. Jesus. You know, but God cares about the whole self. And in those moments where we are physically, emotionally, spiritually overwhelmed, and you got the anxiety rolling at 10 and everything is kind of crazy, you can guarantee that God cares about all of that. And that's one of the really, really beautiful things about that particular passage. And I just didn't think I had time to go into all of that stuff and get through the rest of the stuff I wanted to say. So the Moses story worked out better. But that is a really cool story that I looked at.
Elijah had a lot of great victories. Uh-huh. And then he finds out the queen didn't agree. Surprise, surprise. And then he gets all bent out of shape over that. And I think we can look at it from this, you know, reading it like this story and go, oh, can't believe he acted like that. Couldn't he see what God did? But do we do that in our own lives? I mean, I know I don't. Same with Moses. He's, you know, they part the Red Sea and walk through that, and God's delivering them up after all these plagues. I mean, it's just amazing things. Yet he still comes to the conclusion that it'd be better if he just died. And I think we must need to get over ourselves, that thinking that I'm dishonoring God somehow by being frustrated or anxious, or, you know, when I need to, or I don't know, like I need to trust in him more. God wouldn't give me more. This is that problem where we fall into that trap, because God's saying, no, you need to just relax. You need to trust that I'm going to take care of you. And so he will continue to give us more. And we need to think that I'm not the spiritual giants of the Bible. And they never doubted. They never worried. They never had a problem. It was just smooth sailing for them. And therefore, if I got there too, it would be that. And I don't think that's the case. You're still going to see him act, and then you're still going to end up frustrated. And so now it's continually, like you said, coming back to Jesus every time. I have to come back.
I think one of the cool things about that Elijah story is that phrase that God uses, because I think what Elijah does is what we all do when we feel like we're getting piled on and problems are surrounding us. Our vision becomes very tunnel visioned, and it turns inward. It's about me and what I'm experiencing, and he thinks he's the only one. And it's all about me and my problem, and I'm the only one standing up for God. And God says, there are 7,000 in Israel that have not bowed the knee to Baal. And it's just such a cool statement, because it's like, no, you're not alone. Not only am I with you, but there are others. So let's move on. And I just think that's such a, I think if we realize when we're getting tunnel visioned on our problem and what's happening to us, if we step back and think, wait a minute, I've got brothers and sisters right here and all over the world. And thank God for that.
And it's almost countercultural too. I mean, we're living in a society where who do you trust? I mean, you're taught not to trust, and we look at the news media, whatever it may be, and what's truth, what's not truth. And let's face it, we were all probably raised to be strong, independent. You know, if I raised my children that way, you know, be strong, be independent, and that thing. And all of a sudden, you come to a point in your life when all of a sudden you've got to totally trust and give it all away. And, you know, I, you know, was raised by, you know, great parents who taught me to be strong-willed and self-sufficient. And the culture kind of says, and all of a sudden now you just totally give it all up to him. Put your trust in him. And sometimes people, we struggle with that. Because you're saying, hey, it's yours.
I find it fascinating that for Moses particularly, his problem was the people. But God's solution was other people. And so, because we can look at that and just go, oh, all these people, oh, all these problems, oh, you know, if it wasn't for them, everything would be fine. And God says, hey, I have some other people that are going to help you out. And so we can become cynical and untrusting. And for me, I think this is the part where a life group really comes into play, and why we push it so hard. Is because if you're just showing up Sunday morning, the crowd, hey, you're not having somebody push you. And for me, like, I've sat in a group before and like, Robbie, you're an idiot. Like, okay, I guess I am. They're kinder about that. They really are. But you need that, right? Because I will get into my head and go, oh, it's this person's problem. And they're going, Robbie, no, you're actually kind of at fault here. And they pull me back and then restore me in that. And it's so important to be connected to other people. Because a lot of times the problems we'll face is either ourselves or other people, whether we cause it or somebody else is causing it. And we have to have people that we can trust and rely on that God has put in our life to guide us, to call us out, to lovingly embrace us when we screw up, when we've wronged others. We need that in our life.
Mm-hmm. I think so. And one thing that, you know, that has kind of jumped out at me in this whole discussion has been that that when God shows up to help us, you know, walk through these moments, there are times where he's going to help us identify that, you know, hey, you participated in this. There are times where he's just going to comfort us and love us. But his goal and aim for us is to get us to remember that he's always going to be there, that he's not going to leave. One of the things that I love about both of those stories, you know, Elijah, Moses, whatever, is there's this hearkening back to the fact that God has shown up before and that he will show up again. And that is something that I think is really important for Christians to remember, is however you do it, whether you journal or whether you keep, you know, you just keep memories in your heart, remember the stories of the times God showed up for you. Make a point to tell somebody else a story sometime about how God showed up in your life, just so that you can grind it into your own memory, so that the next time you face a moment of overwhelm or anxiety, that thought pops back into your head, that story pops back into your head. Oh, I remember the last time I was in this kind of situation, and I remember how God did A, B, and C that ultimately, I mean, I can't claim any knowledge of that. I can't claim any power over any of that. God just did those things, and I know it was all him. You know, that kind of thing helps us so much to remember. And I think it's fascinating that throughout the Old Testament, the people of Israel called to remember. And then on the night before Jesus died, he gives them a tool, communion, to remember. And so that this focus point throughout the Bible is remember the God that you're serving and remember what he has done, so that when you face it in the day to day, that will come back to your mind.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point, because maybe it's Exodus or Deuteronomy where God tells them, write this down so you can remember that. Mm-hmm. So that's really
the
great
kings
advice,
were commanded to have their own version of the king Torah. You know,
that's perfect.
You know,
yeah.
And so he's like, remember, 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 all the way across. And so
you think about when they crossed the Jordan into the Promised Land, they pulled stones up from the middle of the Jordan River, and they put them all together into apparently kind of a large mound of stone. One for each tribe. And they said, do this so that the people will remember what happened here. And there's stories like that all over the Old Testament.
Yeah. Well, as we wrap up, my advice to you as a listener then would be, if you're going through something, write it down and then pray about that. Give it to God. Find some people you can trust that can walk with you through this. And revisit it. Revisit what you wrote a year from now. And see if God and how God responded, and write that down again, and remember those times, and keep coming back to something like that. But anything else, guys? Well, this has been hopefully helpful to you. It's been fun for us. Mm-hmm. And if you have more comments, you want to weigh in, questions, clarifications, anything, we would love to hear from you. And you can let us know either by filling out a communication card on a Sunday if you're here with us, or you can email us at info@goodnewsgathering.org. And until next week, we hope that this episode has been helpful for you to go deeper in your faith.
Go Browns.
Go Browns.
Have a blessed day.